While antibodies have been billed as a passport to pandemic freedom, research shows they don't last forever and instead fade over time. However, the latest plasma study suggests this may not be cause for alarm, but instead a call to action. As clinical trials continue to test whether antibodies are key to treating COVID-19, scientists and clinicians also search for the secrets of a strong immune system. As new research sheds light on how our immune response affects anxiety and behavior, the latest findings emphasize that mental health is health, and that our best defense against future illness will involve an integrated approach that keeps both our minds and bodies as strong as possible. Welcome to the Abstract Podcast from Inverse. I'm Tanya Bustos, your host. Our first story is about the new research tracking the limited lifespan of COVID-19 antibodies. While antibodies may not be eternal, the study highlights the fact that, contrary to what you might think, this may not be a bad thing. Our second story looks at a newly discovered link between the immune system and mental health. With the pandemic driving symptoms of anxiety and depression, researchers say it's time to consider COVID-19 a crisis of both physical and mental health, and to treat these crises holistically. This is The Abstract, a look at the latest scientific discoveries and technology innovations from the reporters at Inverse. In each episode, we explore a single theme through two different stories. Up now, what the latest plasma study says about how long COVID-19 antibodies actually last.
New research suggests
good news about immunity in terms of the vaccine response.
As the virus spreads, more of us will become immune.
Maybe not so good news in terms of how long those antibody levels last.
The antibodies aren't with you forever.
And the concern if antibodies that are measured in the blood don't seem to be very durable. Oh my gosh.
But the question is
just how protective those coronavirus antibodies are.
Should I get my antibodies tested?
I had COVID back in April.
Yes, you have antibodies today, but 2 weeks from now, are those antibodies gone?
Since then, I've always had antibodies.
Will that work?
At least I thought I did.
A research letter published September 2020 in the journal Blood provides new hints on how long COVID-19 antibodies last in the blood. Based on samples from 15 blood plasma donors who gave blood at least four times, all 15 donors' blood saw declines in antibodies, suggesting that the specific antibody that binds to the coronavirus spike protein wanes over time. The findings also suggest there may be a window of time in which a plasma donation for experimental COVID-19 therapies is more helpful. While this research underscores the idea that antibodies aren't eternal, at the same time, it highlights the fact that, contrary to what you might think, this is not cause for alarm. Here to explain more about what declining antibodies really means is Inverse's Emma Betwell. Hey, Emma, how's it going?
I'm good. Hey, Tanya.
So this was a pretty small study, but what did it tell us about how long COVID-19 antibodies actually last in the blood? How was this determined exactly?
Yeah, so this study was actually based on people who went in to donate blood. So it's based on a sample of 15 blood donors in Quebec, but those 15 were drawn from a larger sample of 282 people who had donated blood. So if you zoom out to that larger sample of around 282 people, the team noticed something kind of strange. It was that 6.9% of people who had definitely had the coronavirus had then tested negative for coronavirus antibodies when they arrived to donate plasma. And the longer that interval between having, you know, had coronavirus and donating, the more people had tested negative for antibodies. So they found that when they looked at people who wanted to donate plasma between 11 and 12 weeks after symptoms were onset, the percentage of people without antibodies went up to about 15%. So then they narrowed down on to 15 people who'd given blood four times, and they found that about 88 days post-symptom onset, they started to see declines in the amount of antibodies in these people's blood samples. And then a further 21 days after that 88-day mark, half of the antibodies in the individual blood samples had vanished completely.
The fact that coronavirus antibodies don't last forever, while not exactly the news people were hoping for, it's not exactly as bad as it might sound on the surface. Is that what we can take away from this?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of concern about, oh, well, what does it mean for immunity if antibodies don't last forever? And the important thing is to remember antibodies are not the only marker of immunity against a virus. They're one of many different ways that the body, learns what a pathogen looks like and adapts to fight it. So we have, for instance, neutralizing antibodies, which is sort of the gold standard. Ideally, it would stop the virus from entering the cell in the first place. But we also, over time, have memory B cells, which are a type of white blood cell that can remember what a pathogen looks like and jump into action if the body encounters it again. There are also T cells, which some of which can actually destroy cells that are infected with the virus, and other kinds of T cells called helper T cells. They actually help B cells then produce antibodies. So it's actually this really complicated network, or I should say multi-pronged network immunity. Antibodies sort of maybe are the most famous thing we've been talking about for the past couple months, but they're definitely not the only marker.
The concept of donating antibodies is always a big part of this whole conversation. Is it possible these findings can help guide how one goes about doing that? And what is the latest guidance on these plasma therapy programs in general? Because they've proven to be divisive, both medically and politically.
Yeah, so convalescent plasma has had an interesting trajectory for the past couple months. The people in this study were going to donate blood. They're donating blood because they're going to participate in convalescent plasma studies. And basically, convalescent plasma is the idea that blood is actually sort of separated into two parts. You have sort of this yellow kind of gooey plasma substance that has antibodies and other sort of circulating factors. And then you have red blood cells. You can actually take the plasma out that has the antibodies in it and put it into another person. And there are sort of various ways you can manipulate that plasma, but at the risk of oversimplifying it, the idea is that hopefully that plasma would then help somebody else either fight off a very severe case of the disease or perhaps a mild case of the disease. But we really don't know whether this works or not. We've got some sort of early signs that it might work. And based off of those early signs, the U.S. actually issued an emergency use authorization for convalescent plasma, which means that it has the FDA's sort of interim approval to be used on the sickest coronavirus patients. And those are sort of based off of sort of signals of efficacy from, you know, ongoing projects. The Mayo Clinic has a big one called the Convalescent Plasma Expanded Access Program. But when that EUA was released, there had been no completed randomized controlled trials, which is basically what you need to know for sure that something works. Where does this leave us here? Essentially, convalescent plasma is something that's very much on the table still. We're looking at it as a treatment for COVID-19, but assumedly antibodies are going to be a big part of understanding whether or not that plasma is actually effective or not. And if we're going to do those studies, you'd want to have blood samples that still, you know, have coronavirus antibodies in them, which brings us to the study suggesting that if you want to donate, there is definitely a window in which you want to make that donation.
Very good. We'll leave it on that note. Emma, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Tanya.
New research says that one immune molecule may be a key link between the immune system and its effect on the mind and body. Up next, new scientific details about how the immune system and the brain co-evolved and why the brain and body are more connected than most people realize.
Going to talk about anxiety and the immune system.
Stress, anxiety, how it affects your body.
And how you can boost positivity and your immune system.
We're going to increase your immune system. We're also going to help reduce anxiety.
Could your anxiety over this pandemic actually make you sick?
Why am I so anxious and depressed? Are you always sick?
Experts say those who feel sustained stress can weaken their immune systems.
Reduce fear and anxiety, and at the same time, boost your immune system.
Mild anxiety, check.
How's your stomach?
Depends. How's your immune system?
As any stroll through the internet's mind and body aisle can attest, the link between anxiety and the immune system seems undeniable. And a September 2020 report in the journal Nature Immunology reveals a new connection. It all comes down to one immune molecule. It's called IL-17, and it may be a key link between the immune system and its effect on the mind and body. Experiments showed that interactions between this molecule and neurons in the brain can influence anxiety-like behaviors in mice. Ultimately, the results suggest the immune system and the brain co-evolved, and that the brain and the body are more connected than most people realize. here to talk more about how our behavior can depend not only on the state of the brain, but also on the state of the immune system, is Inverse's mind and body editor, Sarah Sloat. Hey, Sarah.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, good. So trying to learn up on this latest study, let's start with this immune molecule, the IL-17. First, what's its backstory? What did we know about its general role in immune function?
Yes. So IL-17 is categorized as a cytokine, which is a signaling molecule that orchestrates the immune response to infection. At this point, you know, listeners have likely heard of cytokine storms, which are an outsized reaction of the immune system linked to high mortality rates in COVID-19 patients. And apart from that, some early studies have correlated high levels of IL-17 with anxiety and depression.
Gotcha. So can you walk us through what this experiment showed about how this molecule specifically interacts with the brain in a way that can influence behavior?
Yes. Ultimately, the experiments demonstrated that, like you said, interactions between this molecule and neurons in the brain can influence anxiety-like behaviors in mice. You know, it's always very important. It seems like we're always adding this caveat, but it is important that, you know, this is a mice study and it has important implications, but, you know, we could only classify it as anxiety-like. But that said, you know, scientists report in the journal Nature Immunology that it seems to be a link between the immune system and its effect on the mind and body. So how did they find it? Step one, they realized that the immune cells in brain tissue included a small population of what's known as gamma delta T cells, and these produce IL-17. So there's layers of membrane that protect the brain and spinal cord, and these are filled with those gamma delta T cells that are, you know, producing IL-17. And in an effort to see how all of these things affect behavior, the team modified the mice to lack either those gamma delta T cells or IL-17, and then put them through a battery of tests designed to evaluate memory, social behavior, foraging, and anxiety. And ultimately, they found that mice that lack those components were the same as the mice with normal conditions, save for in one area, which was anxiety. And so, for example, when the mice were given the option of entering an exposed area, the unmodified mice, the normal mice, stuck to the protective sides of their enclosures, you know, wanting to be safe, realizing that there's perhaps danger, while the modified mice entered into open areas, you know, lacking the anxiety that normally would trigger them to be a little safer.
It's so interesting because it seems like a lot of us think of anxiety as the culprit, you know, that it's the anxiety that can cause your immune system to suffer. Here, it actually plays out in a different way. Because it's a connection that runs so deep, is the idea that this link between the immune system and the brain may have co-evolved as, you know, a mechanism for survival.
Yes, totally. The results suggest that the immune system and the brain co-evolved and that the brain and body are more connected than most people realize. You know, the study also involved other experiments like injecting the mice with a bacterial product that elicits a strong immune response and removing the neurons in the brain that respond to IL-17. These all suggest that the molecule helps regulate behavior as part of a system of neuroimmune communication. And, you know, we see it play out that our behavior is very much dependent not only on the state of the brain, but also on the state of the immune system. And we see it play out where after encountering a particular stimulus, there are many signals the immune system can send to the brain to alter its function and in turn our behavior. These two systems are dependent on each other, and there are more and more studies that prove that.
Is the hope then that this can grow into something that can be used as, say, some sort of therapeutic measure? Where does the research go from here?
Mm-hmm. What the researchers told me is that their final goal is always to validate and translate their observations into that therapeutic angle. Ultimately, you know, they're conducting research to help people, but what that means is that first we have to move towards having human studies. But the current hypothesis is that the overstimulation of the pathway involved in all of this could ultimately link back to anxiety and depression in people. And that hints that modification could be helpful, but many more studies are needed to say for sure.
Mm-hmm. But just another confirmation that the mind and body is connected. It's always good to just have the science back that up. Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Head to inverse.com to read more about the latest studies on COVID-19 and the immune system. You can find links in the show notes for all stories we talked about today. If you agree that science and facts matter more than ever, give us a rating and review on iTunes to help more people find The Abstract and other podcasts like it. New episodes of The Abstract are released 3 times a week. Find old episodes and more original reporting on science, innovation, culture, and entertainment at inverse.com. Got something to say? Email us at theabstract@inverse.com with any questions, suggestions, story ideas, and anything else on your mind. Look for The Abstract podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast app you use. For Inverse, I'm Tanya Bustos. Thanks for listening.